right, guys. Welcome back to Earn Your Leisure Podcast, episode 4. Time flies, man. Yeah. So, we want to first of all, thank you guys for rocking with us. And, you know, we appreciate your feedback. Thank you for your support. Means a lot to us. So we're going to jump right into it. We have a few things that we're going to talk about this episode. The first thing that we're going to talk about is streaming, but on a different level. Yeah. You know, we've covered streaming before, but on the musical side.
Right.
So now we want to cover it on the content side and talk about two major players in the streaming game as far as shows and movies are concerned, and that is Netflix and Amazon.
Yeah, and I mean, we reference them so much that it's only right that we take a look into the business side.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, we talk about Netflix a lot because obviously it's revolutionized the way that we consume television. You know,
well, more so original programming, right? Because TV, that would be, we're gonna get into that too. But Hulu would be more of the television side. But movies and original content would be like a Netflix thing.
Right, yeah. Right. So we wanted to talk about it from a different standpoint, though, because I want to kind of compare Netflix versus Amazon on the business side.
Yeah.
I actually wrote about this on my Instagram a while back, but I wanted to go into depth about it because I don't think people fully understand the fight that's going on right now. To me, it's interesting. We try to take a different approach on business and look at things from a different standpoint, not just report what's going on, but look at it from case studies or look at it from the backstories or look at it from in-house fights and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So there's a big fight going on right now between Amazon and Netflix. And just to kind of give you a quick summary, Netflix, you know, was soaring. Their stock was up 106% midway through last year in June. And then after that, it really started to tank. It was down 37% to end the year. So long story short, they have a lot of different issues, Netflix, mm-hmm. but one of the main issues is that Amazon is coming in and they're putting a lot of pressure on them.
Yeah, well, Amazon is notorious for that. Like, they see somebody's making money down the street and they're like, all right, we got to figure out how we're in this. And usually, when we'll get into that, is when they come into a space, they take over and dominate the space.
Yeah, they're major players for sure. So last year, Amazon spent $5 billion on their original content for their streaming service, right? So what that did was that made Netflix up their spending. So they upped their spending from $8 billion to $12 billion. So the problem with that now is that Netflix now spends more money on original content than any other American television network.
And they've seen some benefits from it, like their shows have been well received. We know Narcos and a couple of other things, Making of a Murderer. They've had great original content, whereas Amazon thus far has struggled with gaining traction on some of this stuff.
Yeah, so yeah, exactly. So you have Ozarks, you have Narcos, you have a lot of hit shows. Yeah. That are popular, that are original Netflix shows, mm-hmm. right? And like you said, Amazon, I don't think they really have that one show.
They haven't had a standout
that
show
they
yet.
Hang their hat on yet. Right. But I think their strategy is more of the long game. So what they're doing is,
that's funny you said that.
As I said, they spent $5 billion last year, right?
Yeah.
So that made Netflix raise their spending from $8 billion to $12 billion just to compete. So by spending $12 billion now they spend more on content than any other American television network. Anybody, ABC, NBC, doesn't matter, anybody, they spend the most. But the problem with that is that they're working on very thin margins, right? So they make very small profit because they're heavily leveraged. So they have a lot of debt, huge amount of debt. So last year, their debt went up 71%.
Right.
So right now, they have $8.3 billion in debt, right? So the problem is that going forward, they can't sustain that. It's not sustainable. So one or two things that are going to happen. They're going to keep borrowing billions of dollars, and eventually they run the risk of going into bankruptcy.
Mm-hmm.
Or they raise subscription prices, which they actually already did.
Yeah. Like, they went from $12 to $16, depending on your package. So if you got the 4K, it was $16. If with that, you can have four people sharing your account. It's like they lose money on that too, right? So like we have, like I have an account, but there's like a few people that use it, right? And so those people that use my account now are not paid subscribers. So that's an issue that they've been combating. But I'm just want to go back for a sec because you said something that was really interesting about Amazon. One of their models, and Steve Bezos wrote this in his 1997 letter.
Jeff Bezos.
I'm sorry, Jeff Bezos. said it in the opening of his company, is that they are about long-term gain. They really don't care about short-term profit or loss. And we're going to see how that plays a part in a company in a few minutes. But, like, that's exactly what's happening now, right? We'll play this game with y'all, but I know that y'all can't.
Well, the thing about Amazon is the third biggest publicly traded company in the world.
Right.
So they have a lot more resources and a lot more funding
to,
like you said, play the long game.
Yeah.
Right? They don't have to win this year or even next year, even 5 years down the line. They can stretch it out for a long period of time. And if Netflix can't find a way to raise revenue at a faster pace, then they're going to be screwed.
Right, because streaming is just a part of their business. Like, their cloud service is 40%
Amazon,
of their revenue.
Yeah, exactly. You know? So, and then the last one that Netflix has to try to combat this is that they can cut content. So that would save them money, but that will also compromise who they are.
Mm-hmm.
Right? They're known for original content. That's why they spend so much money on content.
Right.
So they have some issues, right? Their debt is a major problem for them. And we have to see how it plays out. But it's interesting because Amazon, actually, somebody said this to me, and it's true. If you think about it, I'm not sure why Jeff Bezos named the company Amazon. But if you think about it, Amazon is the name Amazon means massive, huge, like the Amazon rainforest.
Yeah.
And, you know, so that's really what the company has become.
Yeah,
and right. They're such a massive company that they're willing to just spend massive amounts of money to take over other areas, right? Whether it's shipping, whether it's books, whether it now is content. So that's really what they've become. They've become just the abominable snowman.
You can't
stop them.
It's like the big bully in business right now.
Nah, they definitely.
And one of the companies that often gets left out sometimes in the streaming is Hulu. Obviously, they don't generate as much money as Netflix. I think last year they did $8.7 billion. But they have a very interesting story. So Hulu, for those who are not familiar, they do offer original content. And some of their original content is really good. Like The Handmaid's Tale is probably their most popular show. It's won plenty of awards for the acting in it. But they have live TV, which the other platforms don't really offer. Right? They can perform live. They can have 50 channels if you pay for their subscription. There's a premium subscription. I think it's like $40. But what they do is to combat Netflix, who can't put on content that just happened. So like if you wanted to watch Power, you have to wait for that season to be over for it to even get to Netflix. They do it the next day. So they have that advantage. But one other thing that we looked at in studying Hulu is that when I looked at who owns it, it's split up between four companies, right? So Disney owns 30%. 21st Century Fox owns 30%. You have Comcast that owns 30%. And I think Time Warner owns about 10%. So you got 100% of the company owned by four majority companies, right? The interesting thing about that is that Disney is going to have its own streaming service too. So like if Netflix thought that Amazon was the problem, they have a big problem coming their way because Disney is about to take all their content off of Netflix, right? So now they have the Marvel catalog. They have all their Disney catalog. They have Star Wars catalog. But they just are about to close on a deal, I think, the top of the first, maybe sometime this quarter, to acquire 21st Century Fox.
Well, the interesting thing also is that now Apple's getting in the streaming game.
Yeah.
So Apple, this year, they're going to put aside $1 billion to their new streaming service.
And so yeah.
Apple's interesting because Apple, a lot of people, majority of people have iPhones,
exactly.
Right? And the way we're consuming content now is more and more on our mobile devices and not on television. So if you now they have a unique advantage because it's going to be free.
Mm-hmm.
They probably factor in the cost somewhere in the phone, but it's going to be free. Everybody's going to have it on their phone, right? Like iTunes, something like that.
Right.
So now, like how you watch YouTube on your phone, you'll be able to watch the Apple streaming on your phone. So they'll have shows, like they just gave Kevin Durant some money for a show that he's going to put out. So they're putting money into different shows, original content.
Yeah.
But the advantage that they have, like I said, they already have the platform.
Billions of users.
Yeah, they already have the billions of people that already have iPhones and iPads already. So now when they put the content directly on your phone, it even makes it even easier to consume because now you don't have to go to an app or you don't have to, you know, I mean, you have an app, but the app is already on your phone. It's not something that you even have to download. So
those, I mean, those are two major competitors that are coming in this lane within the next year or so, right? Because if Disney goes through with that, I think $71 billion purchase of 21st Century Fox of film and TV division, now they own 60% of Hulu. Right, that's number three in the streaming service. They own 60% of that. Plus, they're going to bring their own content. I mean, that's a Goliath.
Yeah, and it's important too for people that you know are creators to realize that right now is a brilliant time to get funding for your programs, right? Because it's a race for shows. Yep. So you have all of these different companies that are spending massive amounts of money and they're looking for original content.
Yeah.
So,
you could, even that, like some of them are catered toward kids, right? And then some are catered toward the adult population and middle-aged people. So it's going to be an arms race. But one of the interesting things that the fact that we even have this conversation is that people are not doing cable service anymore. Like people have cut the cord and like these are the results of that. We can see that like these companies are existing because people have decided, listen, $160 a month for me to watch 5 to 10 channels is just not worth it anymore. That's right. So then HBO has their own streaming service. Showtime gets their own streaming service. Right? You can subscribe just to those things now. You don't even have to go through Cablevision or Verizon now. So like that's a result of cord cutting, this conversation in itself.
Yeah, yeah. The landscape has changed. Just like I said, we talk about music. Music landscape has changed, but also the television, TV landscape has changed and probably will continue to be changed.
Yeah, I mean, you're not a big TV guy, but like how many channels do you watch when you aren't watching TV? Like,
yeah, I don't watch that. I mean, I watch sports, ESPN.
Yeah, like I watch maybe 4 channels and I pay for 700 of them. Right. Yeah. So like this is the way. This is going to be the way of the future, obviously.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So any more to add about that or?
Yeah, I mean, let's stay with Amazon, okay. Right? Because something that's happening, especially in our area right now, is people are starting to realize this Amazon effect. And what that really is just like you said, like they encompass everything. So the Amazon effect really just means a complete domination or disruption of a market. And we've seen them do this, and companies have disappeared. I'll give you, there's an example of in 2010, and you're a father, I'm a father. There was a company called Diapers.com. You ever heard of them?
No, I know. I haven't.
So Diapers.com pretty much was an online site to help parents. You order, deliver Pampers to your house. And Amazon decided, hey, we want to get in this game. We're getting in this game. So they decided to have Amazon Mom. And their subscription was, if you join Amazon Mom, you get Amazon Prime free for 3 months. Plus discounted prices. So, like, if you know Prime, I'm a Prime member, you get free 2-day shipping, and you're getting discounted on the what you're ordering, right? So whatever baby supplies it is, let's just say there's diapers, you're getting discounted. So it was maybe $40 a box. Now it's maybe $25 a box. They did that to just combat what Diapers.com was doing, and they saw that they were losing money by doing it. But while they were losing money, Diapers.com was losing money too, because two things that parents always look for, affordability and accessibility. Is it going to be affordable for me to get these Pampers? Yeah, it's $15 cheaper. And it gets delivered directly to my home in 2 days. I'm taking that route. So they lost money, right? But in the end, Diapers.com gets shut down. Guess who buys them?
Amazon.
Amazon buys them out. Goodbye. Right? So like, just completely come into a space, take a loss, right? But then, all right, we're buying you. Thank you. We'll take it from here.
Like, I watch the Nature Channel sometimes, and one of these animals, I think it's either a crocodile or an alligator, maybe both, but how they kill their prey is that they smother them, and then they drag them into
drown
the water,
them, right?
And they just keep going deeper and deeper
until
you can't breathe anymore.
Right.
And that's pretty much the business strategy that Amazon's doing, right? It's just take you out further and further into the deep end.
Until you can't breathe anymore.
And then eventually you're going to have to just give up.
Yeah, we'll take it over from here. But they try that again in the home service market. Like there was a company called Porch. And they were deciding, hey, people need help doing things. If you needed plumbing, if you needed lighting, if you needed anything fixing your home, TV mountings, they were providing that service. Amazon saw that and said, you know what? We're going to provide home service, right? So rather than folding like diapers.com did, Porch decided the only way we're going to survive is to try to compete with them just for the short term. So what they did was, you know what? We'll go to your competitor. So they decided, hey, we're going to go to Home Depot. We're going to go to Lowe's and we'll partner with them. And that's how we'll keep our business going. So that's another way, like, hey, rather than just folding short term, let's just keep afloat until they just say, you know what? You're drowning and you have no other choice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah. But, and Amazon's in the news now in our area because most people know, and if you don't, they're looking for a second headquarter and they chose two cities. And New York City was one. And
Virginia.
Crystal City, Virginia, which is the D.C. metro area.
Northern Virginia. Yeah.
And it's interesting because Long Island City is the is where it's going to be. And when people think Long Island City, they probably think that is out in Long Island. And we know that that's in Queens. So this facility is going to be built in Long Island City. But the interesting thing about it is that Long Island City, where the site is going to, the construction is going to take place, if it goes through, is one mile down the road from a place we know very well in hip-hop music.
Yeah, probably not even, well, no, Long Island City. All right, so Queensbridge Project,
there you go.
The biggest housing project in North America, right?
Yeah.
Home of legendary rappers.
Nas,
Mobb Deep, Molly Maul,
MC Shan,
Quamega,
Capone. Else? Capone, don't forget Capone, yes.
And then also Ron Artest.
Yes.
It's been a lot of backlash that will lead to further gentrification of the area.
Yeah.
Change it, but Long Island City is already gentrified, if you know the area.
Yeah.
It's an interesting case study. That we could actually have a whole different discussion about that. Gentrification, yeah. and real estate and things of that nature. But not to stay on this topic for too long, but that's an interesting case study within itself because, you know, I travel and I see different places, not just in New York, but all over the world where a lot of public housing developments were put in prime real estate locations, mm-hmm. right? And Queensbridge is actually a perfect example of that because if anybody's familiar with New York, so Queensbridge Projects is literally right on the water, in Queens, it overlooks Manhattan.
Yeah, from East River and Manhattan.
Right. It's one of the best views that you can have.
Yeah.
It's amazing. So I'm pretty sure when they were building that, they didn't fully think of how
long term.
Yes, exactly. How valuable that real estate is, right? It's one of the most valuable real estates probably in the world.
Perhaps.
So they can't just tear down the buildings. So what they did was they just built around it.
Yeah.
Right. So if you go there now, you have 5-star restaurants, you have Amazon moving there,
yeah.
you have $1 million apartments, and you would never know that it's the largest housing project is right in the middle of all of that because it's kind of hidden almost in a sense.
And that's part of the issue that a lot of people are having. They're saying, look, you're building this 1 billion square foot, almost little town. A mile down the street from the largest housing projects in America, the median income is $15,000, right? And we know that when prime real estate comes in like that, what happens to the rest of the real estate that surrounds it?
It's going up.
Right. But that's for the people who own.
Right.
The people in Queensbridge Projects, they're paying rent.
Well, the thing with that is that so it's owned by the government.
Right.
So it's interesting because so in Brazil— Right. And the favelas in Brazil, if anybody's not familiar with that, that's like the slums of Brazil. And the favelas were built on hills. Right. So in Rio, they have like Christ the Redeemer and they have was it Ipanema Beach?
Ipanema. So you got Copacabana.
Copacabana, Ipanema.
Yep.
So long story short, now they realize that those hills where the favelas are actually prime locations because it's overlooking some of, once again, the most expensive real estate in the world, right? Yes. Like it's overlooking Ipanema, it's overlooking the beaches, it's overlooking Christ the Redeemer.
Sugarloaf.
So now you have a million and a half people living in slums in the hills who At the time, they probably built it saying that we're going to keep the people in the hills away from, you know,
the tourists.
Everybody else.
Yeah.
But now they realize that those hills are actually valuable.
Yeah.
So now they're trying to move people like 5 hours away into different locations because now they want to build luxury apartment buildings and hotels in the hills.
This sounds like you're making a forecast for what could happen.
Well,
right?
That's why, you know, we talk about the world is flat, right? So the same thing that what's going on in Brazil is relevant in New York.
Absolutely.
What's going on in Chicago is relevant in Africa. So but it's interesting as far as, like I said, the real estate play in that regard, because gentrification has a lot of different complexities to it.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's something that I don't think people fully understand how valuable it's interesting, because some of the most expensive real estate is where the poorest people live. Mm-hmm. And that was done on purpose. So now they realize that, you know, they made a mistake.
Yeah. So, I mean, the plus is that they're saying that it'll bring 25,000 jobs. I think it was the promise was 50,000 jobs, and 25 are in the D.C. area, 25,000 come to the New York area. But the people in Queensbridge are like, that's great, but are we?
It's not just Queensbridge either.
How do we do it? So their thing is saying, hey, we'll provide job training and we'll offer affordable housing. But even affordable housing is subjective, right? Because what's affordable to one may not be affordable to another family.
Yeah.
Right? It's not income-based housing.
Yeah.
It's affordable housing.
Yeah. And like I said, New York is a perfect example of that. Because not just Queensbridge. You have a lot of different pockets where it was prime location. Like, look at the Lower East Side, right? For anybody that's familiar, that's the Lower East Side of Manhattan. And at one point in time, that was a very bad neighborhood.
Yeah.
Now it's changed because they realize how valuable that real estate actually is, right? That's the thing with gentrification. They realize now that real estate is actually valuable. So everybody moved out. The neighborhoods got torn apart.
I think T.I. said that, right?
Well,
he's like, what is our role in it?
Well, T.I. was saying that we didn't value the community enough to buy property when it was, and that's what, even when Jay said, you know, I could have bought a place in Dumbo for $2 million.
Yeah.
He said that same place now is worth $25 million.
That's something,
look how
right.
I'm feeling, Dumbo. So, you know, like I said, that's a conversation that we can go on and on about.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. And Amazon's definitely playing a part in coming in and changing the face of the community. We have to see whether it's going to be for the better or for the worse.
Yeah.
But only time will tell.
Yeah, we will see, man.
But I want to go to something else. The Fenty. A lot of times we talk about male entrepreneurs.
Yeah.
And, you know, business a lot of time is like male driven. But we are not male chauvinists. We appreciate women.
Love all women.
We appreciate women entrepreneurs. So I wanted to talk about the cosmetic industry. Mm-hmm. And I thought, what better way to talk about the cosmetic industry than to talk about, you know, two very successful entrepreneurs on their own, which is Rihanna and Kylie Jenner. So you want to just go into that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of awkward that when we talk about the two of them, it's usually in a verse type situation, right? Like Rihanna versus Kylie. But it really isn't. Like, there's enough space and there's enough money
for
everyone to be successful.
Everybody.
And it's like we see that in our music, right? We can't have two successful females. Like, we have to have
one. And that's the thing, too. Yeah, it's important to understand that whether it be race, like, there can't be two top black entrepreneurs, or they can't be two women, or whatever. There's enough for everybody. So I don't really even like the... Because somebody had commented the comparison. And I'm sure it's done in good nature.
Yeah.
But we just want to look at both of them, right?
Yeah.
Because they are both very successful, right?
Absolutely.
And they're both two people that we can learn from.
Yeah. So Rihanna's company, her cosmetic company, Fenty Beauty, started in 2017. Did some amazing numbers. I think within the first 40 days, they grossed $100 million as a company. She had a line, 40 foundations of 40 shades of foundation, which was hugely popular. It celebrated diversity. Women of all colors, shapes, and creeds could use it. And what's interesting about Fenty Beauty is that although it hasn't made the most I mean, it did pretty well, but it hasn't made the most. Its average customer spends $470 a year on the cosmetics.
Well, another interesting thing about Fenty is that they're not limited edition.
Right.
So, like, you know, we talked about that model. Like, even if you look at Supreme or, like, Kanye, when his sneakers comes out, a lot of times in business, it's limited, right? Mm. Which leads to a higher demand, which you can drive prices. But yeah. Fenty doesn't have, that's not their business model.
Yeah. And so, and even with that, even though it's not limited, it sells out. Like, if you go try to find
right.
They replenish. But the average person spends more money on their brand than any other brand. So, like, even with, like, Kim Kardashian West's line or Kylie's line, like, the average amount of money spent per year is maybe $100 less. So that shows you that there's loyalty to this brand and people are supporting it because the product must be good.
And like, they've done a good job with social media. So there's a company called Cherry Picks.
Right.
And what they do is they track online purchases based off of social media engagement. So they have actually outpaced Kylie Cosmetics, which is Kylie Jenner's company, towards the end, I think the last quarter of last year. So that's a big milestone for them because they're fairly new. They just started.
Yeah.
So they actually outpaced them in that department. So yeah. they've done a good job. I mean, of course, you have Rihanna.
Yeah. And people are like, oh, and obviously we know her from being a great musical artist. And like a lot of people like, where's the album? Where's the new work? And she's been focused on just getting her cosmetic line off the ground. She has the lingerie line that she did as well. She has a lot of things.
Well, it's like we're talking about George Clooney when he made $270 million off of the tequila company.
And then you ran it. You saw it, right? That's how we hadn't seen it. And then you ran.
Yeah, he made that off of the tequila company. And like, well, why is he not acting? Why do you think he's not acting?
I'm focused on this.
Yeah. So the same thing with Rihanna. I mean, I'm sure she has love for music.
Yeah.
But you got a chance to
be a billionaire.
Really cash out off this. It's like, okay, music is cool, but
touring is great.
This is different.
Yeah. And like I said, it's done extremely well. 2018, they reported $573 million in sales, which is interesting when you look at it because when they showed her net worth, Rihanna, I think, went from like $80 million to $210 million because of her deal with Fenty Beauty. Now, the interesting part about Fenty Beauty is not she doesn't own 100% of it. And that's something we've been talking about a lot, like own 100%. She owns a stake in it. The parent company is LVMH, which is really Louis Vuitton, Moet, Hennessy. And they're a luxury conglomerate. So like they combine, they see value in something, we'll put money behind it. So they're the parent company, they own majority of the stakes in it. Whereas Kylie Cosmetics, completely different story. Right? Like so when Travis is like baby mama cover Forbes, like 900 million, like this is like, this woman has a chance to be the youngest billionaire in the history, self-made billionaire in the history of the United States, like within the next year. I think she does it before 23, she passes
Mark Zuckerberg. We can't discredit Kylie Jenner.
Yeah.
We're not going to do that.
Yeah.
Because it's been a lot of backlash
on
her. Like, she's not a self-made because obviously she comes from a wealthy family, and of course. But how many wealthy children squandered their parents' gifts, right? So you still have to have some self-drive, some business acumen.
She has a better start, but it is still self-made.
You still have to go somewhere,
yeah, she's,
right?
So 2015, like, she starts out with just the lip kits. Like, that was her company. And that was funded from, I think, like, she had a modeling deal and the TV show had just started. So she's got money from that. So she put
She's leveraged her social media presence. She's leveraged her family name. And, I mean, what are you not supposed to do that? Like, that's what she's supposed to do.
I think she's getting paid $1 million. For an ad. Like, we spoke about her sister a couple weeks ago getting $250 for the ad. She's charging $1 million per ad.
And she owns the company.
100%. So they did $800 million in sales. Like, so if she owns 100% of the company, who is she paying? Right? The only person that gets a cut of that is her mom, who's the manager. She gets 10% of, you know, all the things that she makes. So she does $1 billion, mom gets $100 million. But like, you're 23 with $900 million?
Yeah.
It's amazing.
No, it's it's definitely something to marvel at.
Yeah, and applaud.
It's not easy to run a business, especially a business that large, especially that young.
Yeah.
Right? Because there's a lot. I mean, you give a 22-year-old $10 million, they might just go crazy. They're not worrying about turning that $10 million into a billion.
Right.
Like, you know, so yeah, I think that both of them our success stories, but I also wanted to talk about another success story that a lot of people may not have heard of in the cosmetic industry, a woman named Pat McGrath. Have you heard of her?
You're about to enlighten us right
so
now.
So Pat McGrath is a UK citizen. She is a child of Jamaican immigrants, and she's a celebrity makeup artist. So the interesting thing about her is that she's been a celebrity makeup artist for years now, and she started her makeup line 2 years ago, and it actually reached a $1 billion valuation last year. So the valuation on paper is actually worth more than Kylie Jenner's company.
Okay.
That's something that to applaud as well, because she's not a celebrity. She's not famous. She comes from humble beginnings.
Shout out to
and, the And, you know, she, yeah, her cosmetic company is now valued over $1 billion. And like I said, not even to compare it to Kylie, but since Kylie's in the news, you know, we have to use that as framework, but it's actually on paper worth more than Kylie Jenner's company. So that's something to keep in mind as well, because, you know, we do talk about sports and entertainment a lot because it's kind of the theme of the show, but we want to highlight, you know, regular everyday entrepreneurs as well, people that don't come from, you know, sports, entertainment, celebrity backgrounds. And, you know, I think that's important as well, because it encourages anybody to, you know, say, you know, if you follow your dreams, then you can do this as well. So cosmetic industry, huge. And it has been a huge industry for forever. And it probably will always be a huge industry. So there's always money to be made in cosmetics and in beauty. And we do not have to pin ourselves against each other.
Yeah.
There's enough for everybody.
Yeah, and speaking on the topic of entrepreneurs, that was like one of the questions and a lot of feedback people want to know is like, what does it take to be an entrepreneur? What is that like? And you want to touch on that? I mean, you are an entrepreneur yourself.
Yeah, briefly. We'll end it with this. So, entrepreneurship is something that is not for the faint of heart, and it's not easy. A lot of times, you know, it's glamorized. We see. It's becoming very trendy now. It's very popular, and it's a good thing that, you know, more people are encouraging to go out there and create a business. But I wanted to just talk, you know, a lot of times we have to show both sides of the coin.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing about being an entrepreneur is that it's something that financially there's no guarantees, right? Like you have the same bills every single month, but cash flow is not the same every month.
If you don't move your feet, you don't eat.
And not even that. Sometimes it's not even up to, you know, you can do everything right and still not get paid. Things just fall through, right?
Yeah.
So it's like you might go 2-3 months without getting paid. Your rent has to still get paid. Your mortgage still has to get paid. Your kids got to still eat. So that pressure is different. And it can be lonely. You know, a lot of times people don't fully understand. Like if you work in a workspace, you know, you have coworkers and things of that nature. So that provides a certain level of social engagement and interaction.
Yeah.
But when you're an entrepreneur, a lot of times you're by yourself. And you're by yourself all day trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is rewarding because, you know, you do have freedom. And it can be financially rewarding as well. But it's just important, I think, to keep in mind. People, like you said, ask the question, like, what's the first steps? How do you get started? There really is no first steps or blueprint. You just got to go out there and figure it out, right?
Yeah.
I mean, of course, you want to set up your LLC, set up your company, do your market research, see, you know, have a mentor, have a couple of mentors. But ultimately, you're going to have to just jump out the airplane and just kind of figure it out on your own, because there is no set science to it. There's no roadmap or no book that you can actually read that's going to give you the real world experience. Only real world experience is going to give that to you. So, yeah, just wanted to touch on that for a couple of minutes. But that is we're at the end. Time flies. You want to have a final word before we leave?
Yeah, I just want to say just that honesty that you just shared, man. Like, I watched you go through that process. So, like, everything you're saying is 100% honest, and you were completely transparent about it. And networking is one of the things you did. And one of the things when I was listening to you was, like, that was so important. I remember when you started, I was like, yo, I don't care what you're doing. I'm your first client. And, like, that's been true. And that network that we have is, like, important. And it's time for us as a community to, like, start sharing, right? Like Pac said, like, I got love for my brother, but we can never go nowhere unless we share with each other. It's, like, time for us to start sharing resources, sharing knowledge, you know what I'm saying, sharing experiences so that we can all grow. So networking and sharing with each other, man.
All right, guys, that is episode 4. Spread love.
Spread love, man.
Spread love. That's how you want to end it. Spread love. Thank you for rocking with us. We'll see you next week.